Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is AC2GS. My name is Roy. I'm net control operator for this, the Limark Technical Net. For more than 43 years, this thing has been rolling. Every Sunday night at around 8 o'clock, we sit in front of our radios and we tell each other stuff that we learn from each other, we teach each other, and hopefully we entertain each other. And I thank you again for joining me this particular Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we try and do it all over again. Let me drop for a second and I will give you the usual links. If you want to reach me via email, that would be for what we used to call mailbag questions, or if there was some technology in the news that you have knowledge of and would like to share it with us and present a small summary, or if you have a TechNet puzzle, we're always looking for those things, or if you'd like me to tap Paul on the shoulder and have him take a look at some space and ask a related story that you've seen. Of course, you can directly contact him. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com, but my email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Also, as I've often mentioned, I have a link page where I cut and paste interesting articles and YouTubes and what have you that I've seen over the past week, and it's available on a page that I keep up for years and years. So you don't have to go to it today or tomorrow or next week, but if you had a bit of insomnia or a bit of boredom and you want to kind of see if there's anything interesting that I found, just type into your browser roy.ac2gs.com and that will bring you to the link page. We have a chat room available. Sometimes it's quiet, sometimes it's noisy. You get there by typing in to your browser chat.ac2gs.com. And we offer an audio stream of the Technical Net, and I leave it on for the rest of the week so you can listen in to Glen Oaks if you don't have a radio nearby, but you do have an Internet connection. You get there by typing into your browser technet.ac2gs.com. And, of course, I always like to remind people that MikeKC2NJI has a great archive site. It's called amateurradio.tv. It has archived copies of the Limark Technical Net that go as far back as September of 2006. So avail yourself of the wisdom of people who've either moved away from the area or unfortunately passed away and became silent geese. Their wisdom persists in the archive files over at amateurradio.tv. So those are the usual links. Let me drop for a second and I'll be right back. Okay, tonight we're going to have a rather vanilla show. I don't have any particular words of wisdom. AI is always kind of bubbling in the background, but yeah, I think they just released, OpenAI released something called 01, I think 01 Pro. So, but, you know, a little bit more of the same, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending upon how you feel about artificial intelligence. So anyway, we will ask for questions of a technical nature, science, amateur radio preferably at the beginning. We'll take names, we'll take call signs, and you can establish an order. So, you know, if you first come on the radio at 10 o'clock and you're annoyed that you're not taken immediately when you arrive, well, that's the reason. Put your name in. You know, we all know how to make a line. So it's just a matter of making a line. So we will hopefully get some amateur radio questions first, but we're open for any science and technology discussion. That hopefully should take us to approximately 10:15. Paul WS2N will join us for the SpaceNet report, which should take us approximately to 11 p.m., and I will return to tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the coming week. That's my plan. As long as nothing terrible befalls anyone or anything, the repeater, my computer, my computer locked up just 1 hour ago, and I'm going to have to do a little maintenance on it after the TechNet is over and done with, so hopefully it's gotten it out of its system and it's not going to be a problem for the rest of the Technical Net. We'll see how it works. on with the show or on with the net. If anyone has any questions or comments or topics for discussion tonight, preferably amateur radio related, please hit that push talk, give me your ID, and what you got for us.
Can't do it, Jan.
Say again? I
think WS2N.
Full recognize. Okay, Wesley. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight? Okay, hopefully as the night progresses, there'll be more people. Wesley, a lot of your stuff, I think, is not going to be actually, let's see, it's from last week. You have a kind of long list, and I'm sure Paul's is going to be rather short. So would you mind if I take Paul first?
Absolutely, go ahead.
Okay, Paul, what's your question or comment?
Okay, here's a question that we've done on the net years ago, but as time goes on, you know, new people come by, maybe they haven't heard it. This has to do with bandwidth. You know, the more data you send across a frequency, you need a wider bandwidth, you know. And my question basically is, why do you need that? For instance, you send slow CW, and you could get by with very tight bandwidth, you know, on any of the bands. Now you get up to higher speeds, 10, 20, 30, 40 words a minute, and you're going to need a wider bandwidth. That means, you know, you can only get a certain amount of people on the band. You know, you're shortening the amount of people that can stay on one band. You get into a real high digital mode, and, you know, of course, that number increases even more. But why does it increase? You know, in other words, you're sending CW, and you're going on off with a series of dots, for instance. And, you know, you're on one particular carrier. That carrier is coming on, coming off, on, off. You know, so what difference does it make? Why is it, you know, if I'm sending, you know, 20 dots a second, you know, how come that thing has to be much wider if I'm going to send 100 dots or 1,000 dots a second? Back to you, Roy.
Late check-in?
Yep, someone wanted to do a late check-in.
Roger. This is KT2QY2. JoJo in the mobile in Harrison, New York. Back to Roy.
Okay, Joe, do you got a question for tonight, or are you just checking in?
Yeah, my friend Lindsay's in the car with me, and she has a quick question. Go ahead, Lindsay.
So I know that during the Cold War in the Soviet Union, there was some big, crazy, tall radio tower thing that caused something that was, like, called, like, chirping or something on radio towers. I can't remember what it's called, but I was wondering if you guys had any knowledge about that. Yeah, it was, like, I don't know if it was in, like, Ukraine or Poland or something, but it's, like, some big, like, mile-long radio tower that's, like, you know, 500 feet high, and it caused interference with communications all around the world. It caused some weird, like, chirping noise that they were aware of, and that's what tipped people off on the western side of the Cold War, is that there was some sort of weird radio tower that was eavesdropping. So I was just wondering if you guys had any knowledge about that, because I've always found that fascinating.
Oh, okay. Back to you, Roy. This is KC2QYW.
Okay, very good. Lindsay, we have a kind of order here. So Joe checked in third, although I'm sure Wesley wouldn't mind if I kind of push you up to second. But first, we're going to cover what Paul asked, and as soon as we're finished with that, we'll get to you. Okay? Will you be around?
Oh, yeah, Roger, Roger. That's good with us. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Well, getting back to Paul's question, it's a very, very good question. The fact of the matter is, every ham kind of knows single sideband. They know that how single sideband sort of works. But the reality is that everything that we transmit produces sidebands. Morse code produces sidebands, and they're wider. The more data that's transmitted, the wider the sidebands on either side. And even FM has sidebands. And, of course, AM has sidebands where we figured out that we could chop the carrier, we could chop one of the sidebands off, and make for a much more efficient signal. So, you know, physics makes you pay the price for everything, including information. So as you increase the symbol rate of any transmission using any mode, you invariably produce sidebands that you have to deal with. If you try to filter them out, you will filter out part of the data. I don't know what it would quite sound like if you did it to CW, probably because the sidebands are very narrow and no one really transmits data fast enough to kind of slice it off and distort it, but it would be kind of curious to look up. But certainly with a single sideband, with AM, with FM, those sidebands are prominent things that you have to be aware of and make sure that you're not filtering out. So if anyone has any more information that they would like to share about how symbol rate increases generate sidebands on either side of the carrier frequency for any transmission, feel free. I was hoping one of our electric engineers would like to add a little bit more nuance to that.
DDH with a comment.
Yes, John, thank you. Yes, certainly.
Well, as I understood the question, like if you take an example, let's say you're sending 100 dots per second with CW, say you could key that fast. So that means 100 dots per second means that it's like you're using a square wave where you're turning the carrier on and off 100 times a second. So that square wave of turning the carrier on and off 100 times a second is giving you side frequencies that are 100 hertz, 300 hertz, 500 hertz, that is odd multiples of the fundamental frequency of 100 hertz. So, and all of that is what produces the carrier being going on and off at that rate. So as you started to knock down those sidebands, let's say you started to filter them out, when you got down to the point where you just left the fundamental frequency, it would be like you were modulating with 100 cycles per second tone there. So in other words, you would not be able to distinguish a dot, an on dot from an off dot. It would be very difficult to do. So I guess that's probably the easiest example to look at. Like you're sending this high keying rate, and it's causing these side frequencies. Go ahead.
Okay, that's a good point. But as we all kind of know that if you really send a square wave at CW, you're going to get what people annoyingly call clicking. So most CW transmitters have built in, they soften the slopes of these on-off signals. So they're not really square waves. As far as my understanding of the way CW transmitters filter the square waves into something a little bit more able to deal with so that you don't get clicking. Isn't that right, John?
Yes, those clicks are essentially the high order side frequencies that are scattering or giving you interference on adjacent channels. If you were to key with a perfect square wave, yeah, you would have clicks that would extend a couple of kilohertz above and below the frequency where you're actually on. So what they do is they slightly round off the square wave sides, which knocks off some of the higher harmonics, so you don't have that wide frequency spread. They don't do it too much because then your keying gets very soft, and you really it becomes hard to distinguish, a keying on from a keying off. So you want a little rounding of those edges of the square wave, which takes away those higher order harmonics. But you don't want to do it too much that your keying gets very soft and it's hard to distinguish an on from an off. Go ahead.
Even if you softened it a great deal, you'd still have a degree, unless it was just a steady state, informationless oscillation of sine waves. Anytime you kind of interrupt a uniform signal, the interruption from one type of a uniform signal to another type over time, it introduces sidebands to it. So in the same way that audio signals, a lot of people kind of don't remember sometimes that amplitude modulation is primarily the information is not carried on the carrier. It's carried on either side of the carrier, on the upper sideband and the lower sideband. And FM modulation also generates sidebands depending upon the symbol or information rate of your transmission. So unless you want to set a steady signal that doesn't change, that doesn't offer any particular information, you can contain that in a very, very small space. Once you start to add information to the stream, it invariably broadens the spectrum of the transmission that you're sending. You can't get around it. And that's one of the problems with submarines when they were using ultra-low frequencies and they had to keep to a very narrow bandwidth, their symbol rate, their data rate, invariably was very, very constricted. That's why people love microwave, because you get these nice, broad bandwidths. You can send 4K video if you're so inclined.
The rule of thumb is that the eternal sine wave that you never turn on and are never going to turn off and not going to modify in any way has an infinitesimally narrow bandwidth. If you do anything to the sine wave at all, various amplitude, various frequency, periodically or anything like that, you introduce side frequencies. So only the sine wave that never started and never is going to get shut off and never going to change amplitude has an infinitesimal bandwidth.
Guys are both keying KC2, SC2. Slow it down.
Slow what down, John?
You guys are both keying. You're timing out my node. Things to drop, but I do have a comment and a question.
Feel free.
Is it synonymous, or is it just similar to the same reason that the faster you have a rise time, you also have higher frequency components generated? Are these two things the same or similar, KC2 and KC2?
I think they're two aspects of the same exact thing. You don't have any rise time if you don't have any change. And as you introduce change, you introduce non-uniform, non-sine wave signals, which produce their own harmonics and such. So I think it's just two different way of looking at the same exact thing. DC. How are you? I'm fine, Brian. You want to be put on the list for later? Because we're talking right now to John, KC2SHO, over at Los Alamos.
Oh, cool. Okay, I don't know what subject you're talking about. I just tuned in. Sure.
Okay, Brian, so sit there and then listen, and if you have something interesting to add, feel free. Don't quit key. John, are you out there? We kind of lost you.
Roger, this is JoJo in the mobile.
No, you answered my question. You know, describing the phenomenon, I thought, man, you know, that sounds a lot like what, you know, high frequencies generated on fast rise times, so... almost seems like, yeah, the same thing. It's the change that's causing it. I mean, last question. More amount of time, more byproducts, I don't know. Just trying to put it together. Anyway, back to you, Ray. Go ahead, KC2.
Yeah, like I said, there's a lot of different ways to interpret pretty much the same thing. You know, the laws of physics don't let you get away with free stuff, so you got to pay in some way. You know, I mean, that's also part of information theory. So if you're going to increase the amount of information, you're going to have to divert from a uniform, perfect sine wave, which, as John mentioned, effectively, John VDH mentioned, would give you an infinitesimal bandwidth. But an infinitesimal bandwidth isn't worth much if you can't communicate any idea whatsoever. It ends up being just a beacon, I guess. So, it's interesting how there's a whole bunch of different ways of kind of constructing the same underlying principle. So Paul, did we kind of go over the answer to your memory?
Okay, very good. Yeah, it's been a long time since I've heard that discussed. Naturally, we have books on it and all, but to hear everybody's point of view, John and then the other John, it's very good, very well done. I would imagine part of it is the frequency of the audio frequency itself. You know, you might be transmitting over CW, you know, 500 or 700 hertz, you know, and that's going to change as well. So, yeah, very good. I'm going to look back in the old archives, but I'd probably spend the better part of 2 days trying to find it. Well, it's been discussed a number of times, but you know, when you have to back. What is it, 2007 or something, when they started recording? It would be tough to find. I know the early recordings, they did start to put little topics on different parts of the TechNet. That was good, but that became, I think, an overwhelming project. So, very good. Roy, thanks for that. Everybody else, back to you, Roy.
AC2GS, you're welcome, Paul. Yeah, unfortunately, you know, Mike over there at amateurradio.tv, when he first started to do the archives, he scribbled down a couple of subject indexes for the entries, but after a while, I guess it just became too much work, which is understandable, and I've spoken with him through the years of outsourcing indexing to, you know, guys who like the idea of the archives and would like to have it indexed if we can spread it around. We talked about getting artificial intelligence, and I've mentioned it in the past. I've already figured out how to transcribe things. The problem is getting into an index that's manageable is somewhat problematic at this point, at least. So I'm always thinking of different ways of getting an index for the archives, and I make sure that the archives stay kind of up to date. Occasionally, Mike goes away on vacation, unlike us, and so I give him copies that I record when I'm doing this. So, yeah, it's good that you brought it up, Paul. The tone that you hear with CW, as you know, is just an offset that you set yourself. If the carrier itself was constant, there wouldn't be any particular sidebands. It's only with the off-on nature of modulating the carrier that the sidebands on either side are generated. It's not a lot because the amount of information that most of us can send with Morse code isn't going to cause ridiculously wide bandwidth, so it's barely noticeable to anyone. Anyway, thank you as always, Paul. Wesley, do you mind if we do Joe/Lindsay's question first, and then we'll get to you?
Absolutely, go ahead.
Okay, Lindsay. There used to be in Eastern Europe, there have been a lot of transmitters out there. There was an infamous group of transmitters that were called number stations. And you would just kind of tune in, and you would have this kind of bland male voice just reciting an endless series of numbers. And most people thought that it was a spy thing, that the Russians or the East Europeans of one type or another were sending coded messages to their agents. There was what you mentioned, the chirp stations that would play these strange chirping noises. That was a little bit more opaque of exactly what the heck that was all about. That's about all that I sort of know. I think there are still occasionally number stations out there. At least I remember people reporting them. I haven't heard any myself since I was licensed and listening for them. If anyone else has any more information on those chirpers and the number stations, please feel free.
Yes, this is K2VCV, Gene and Sheldon. I have some information on that.
Sure, Gene.
Okay, this is K2VCV, it's Sheldon. My name is Gene. They had a big array. It was called the Duga, D-U-G-A, in Ukraine, right by Chernobyl. And that's they needed the Chernobyl power plant to power this thing. And it was called the Woodpecker. And this was very, very pronounced on 80 meters. In fact, quite a few of the low band frequencies or whatever. But if you go to YouTube and you plug in D-U-G-A radar, you can see all the information about that. Go ahead.
Comment?
Yes, please comment.
Hello, this is Lindsay again. So, yes, the one that I was referring to was the Duga station. I think there's one near Chernobyl, and they decommissioned it in 1989. But, yeah, the woodpecker noise. And also, in reference to the number station, I believe those things still exist. I have never actually heard them before, but from what I've read, they still exist, at least in South America. And I think it might be related to the CIA, but I'm not sure. I don't know if Russia ever used them officially, but from what I understand, the United States CIA did use them.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, Roy, another question about this stuff. What about the citizens band, the citizens band, the CB radio? Maybe it also affected them too. Yeah, back to Roy.
Joe, in what way do you think it affected the CB operators? I've never heard any CB operator tell anyone that they came on upon a chirp station or a number station. You have to keep in mind that theoretically, a citizen's band is 11 meters. It's supposed to be low power, so it's supposed to be kind of local. I'm sure there's a lot of people who have linear amplifiers plugged into their CB transmitters. But, I mean, theoretical, the way that CB is sort of meant to operate, most of these strange stations were usually at the lower frequencies, in 80 and 40 meters. They, as far as I'm aware, didn't particularly show up on 11 or 10 meters much, if at all.
Okay, roger. Just one more question, and then everybody else does their turn. Okay.
So, after the Duga stations were decommissioned in 1989 after the Soviet Union collapsed, was there any more instances of any sort of radio interference from over-the-horizon radar or anything like that that you're aware of?
Back to Roy.
Okay, I mean, historically, I'm unaware of any severe things. As I mentioned earlier, yeah, the number stations have still kind of been running. I don't know if they're only CIA. I think a lot of different countries like to set up spy networks. But again, if anyone has any better idea whether, you know, jamming stations were a thing, past the the end of the Soviet Union, feel free to tell me. Hit that push to talk. I guess not, Lindsay.
Okay. She said thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your insight on all this, because I've always been fascinated by this stuff. I've studied international politics and behind the Iron Curtain stuff, and yeah, I've always found it fascinating. So thank you very much for your insight. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, and we'll try to be back soon, next week again. Okay, back to the segment.
Okay, Joe. You're very welcome, Lindsay. You're welcome any Sunday night here. I look forward to your future questions. This is AC2GO. By the way, just to touch back at our previous question and discussion, John, KD2BD, who's in our chat room, left a message. CW is just a form of AM. Modulation produces upper and lower sidebands. If the rate of the modulation is increased, the sidebands are moved further and further away from the carrier or the center frequency. So thank you, John. That's our third John. We have three Johns right now. And there's probably more listening. Anyway, this is AC2GS, and I'll ask one more time. If anyone has any amateur radio-related questions for tonight, please hit that push to talk and ID yourself. Okay, Wesley, what do you got for us?
Hello, Jan. Just I would like to comment on the Woodpecker and Duga. So when we were talking about the interference, the source that was not to be confirmed for years is that the radio community had already concluded that the noise was produced over the horizon radar, and that was Duga radar, the Soviet Union early warning system. And another one was Woodpecker from 1976 to December 1989. There was a strange noise that could be heard on shortwave radios around the globe. But so the signal was extremely powerful, because the antenna was like 900 feet long and about 300 feet tall, depends from the location. They were located in area that was former Soviet Union, now is close to the Kursk Oblast in next to the Ukraine, but it's right now under the control of Ukraine. And the other one was in Belarus. I don't know if I correctly answered the question about the interference, but
okay, well, you gave us more additional information. We've had a lot of good people with good bits of data, so I do appreciate that, Wes.
During the due to the collapse of Soviet Union, all of those stations were closed. There was another Duga 2, and Duga 2 was located in Siberia. But now is it's just a piece of rusting metal that is there and is no longer being used. There was also another one that was oriented on Pacific Ocean, but the intention of Russian was to use it to detect U.S. missiles going from the Pacific Ocean, but I don't have the accurate information about it. And to actually end the deal.
Okay, that's understandable. I mean, a lot of this is probably still some degree of top secret. Anyway, you know, there are some aspects of the history that have their top secret nature is not going to expire for another, you know, 7,500 years. So, you know, I don't think there's any Civil War secrets that haven't expired, but I'm sure there's more than a few even World War II secrets that are still locked up. So it's understandable. None of us are going to have the entire history of this thing. You know, some degree of it has been kind of, you know, stored away, and maybe future generations will know a lot more about it than we do.
Interesting. I was triggered by need to know. Although the people knowledgeable with radios knew that Russian woodpecker was some form of the horizon, over-horizon radar, the conspiracy theories began running rampart against the public, so ideas of mind and weather control were toasted around with others' fears the signal would destroy the brain cells. Actually, I leave to you to repeat again what frequencies can affect a human body and from what distance, at what power, back to you.
Well, I mean, that goes kind of back to the Havana syndrome that we spoke about for many, many, many times on the technical net. I still remember Dick had watched 60 Minutes right before the TechNet began, and 60 Minutes, which used to be a much better show, you know, news kind of show, kind of turned into a somewhat sensationalist, dubious show these days. So they were kind of pitching, you know, microwave radiation, I think, on that show. And, you know, to a degree, microwaves can cause problems directed. Usually ultrasound is much more obviously destructive. Ultrasound, which is also one of the things people think the Havana syndrome is or was, can kind of disrupt your ability to kind of think. But nothing was really proved, by the way, with the Havana syndrome. It's still speculation. There's absolutely no proof whatsoever. And mass hysteria is probably the most likely cause for it, unfortunately. It doesn't mean you're crazy to be involved in mass hysteria, but there have been many, many, many reports of mass hysteria for centuries. There was a town that broke into dance spontaneously and couldn't stop dancing. You know, it wasn't evil spirits. It was just mass hysteria. But, you know, I mean, I mean, you could screw people up all kinds of different ways, and I don't think you can produce the amount of energy required, even next to a nuclear generator, to blanket a large area, surface area of the Earth, with enough microwaves to kind of damage people that much. So, you know, again, I think it's good old paranoia.
Well, let's move back to the 90s. The U.S. were comfortable in their conclusion that they would not receive official confirmation until Soviet Union collapsed in 1990s. So even the exact details of the system was kind of mystery. The documents that contain information about Duga radars, those who were discovered by ham radio operators, and then the information spread to the general public. So the how they were used have either been destroyed or locked away a long time ago. Nobody knows nothing. But today the mystery of Russian woodpecker has been solved. So Duga is a form of woodpecker. So woodpecker is like the main name for all of those stations. But the structure still remains rusting quietly away in the Chernobyl exclusion zone, because Ukraine had so many of those nuclear warheads and radars, of course, specially made for early stage of response. Let me just... I remember when I was a child, my father was teaching mathematics, physics, and chemistry, but during evening time, he was taking both of us, me and my brother, and we were listening to Radio Free Europe, and we had that signal of the Russian Glushivka, they call it Glushivka, Russian interfering stations, that was trying to do the best to do not let us listen to the truth. So that is one of the ways of Soviet Union who were able to create a whole infrastructure that was kind of hurting or kind of uncomfortable or kind of a unknown, so that people could blab about it. That's what she is.
Yes, such is the nature of any totalitarian state in the modern era. You have to control the means of technology. Information is power, and so you must control all the ports of information. The Russians, surprisingly, are not as good as the Chinese to do this in you know, our modern times. The Chinese have locked up the internet. They have bots. They have human beings combing through everything. If you say something nasty, filters will first lock it down, and then police officers will usually knock on your door and suggest that you come down to the police office for a cup of tea.
Oh, yeah. So we're talking about the power, because you were mentioning about the power. Duga system, which is the one of the stations having a name Duga from all stations called Woodpecker, there was 10 megawatts. 10 megawatts of power emitted in the shortwave radio band. It was extremely wide. So, because it was very close to the Woodpecker sound, they called it, American called it Woodpecker. It was a sharp, repetitive topic noises at frequency of 10 hertz. But at the frequency that was used for it, so it wasn't like the frequency of transmission was 10 hertz. There was 10 hertz frequency used as a source of modulation. So the random frequency holds often disturbed legitimate broadcast amateur radio operational training, commercial aviation communication, and utility transmissions, resulting in thousands of complaints by many countries worldwide. Yeah, but now that era is over, the Soviet Union doesn't exist any longer, and we have a new development about Syria, but this is political, so I'm not going to talk about it. Back to you.
Yeah, yeah, we should leave that to the political net. But again, it's extremely common. And if you go through history, even before the presence of state-of-the-art technology of communications, you know, there were other methods of communications. One of the first things that pretty much all totalitarian states will lock up is the means of those communications. Two extremes. If some nation finds out that coffee houses are places where people get together to complain, they close the coffee houses. They certainly lock up the newspapers. And, you know, it depends what each time and each culture uses as a means to broadcast in the broadest sense. Communications with each other. You want a silent population. You want a passive population. And yeah, so that was what the Soviet Union did in its day. I don't think it would be cost effective to put all your money into things like that today, again, because now we live more in the age of the Internet. So you can jam the radio waves and people can watch videos in 4K. Now we have Chinese trawlers that, as a side job, cut fiber optic cables on the bottom of the ocean. So, you know, the cat and mouse thing just keeps on going. It just becomes higher and higher tech.
Okay, so I have a first object. There is a comparison between two opposite extremes. So we're talking about Hilbering, H-I-L-B-E-R-L-I-N-G, Hilbering, transceiver, and Alice, S-G-R, transceiver. One is German technology, and everything that is German has its own very special taste. Is absolutely amazingly good, and it is expensive. So if somebody complains that the new three new radios that I mentioned a few weeks ago when I was talking about it, that were put on the market, are expensive, then I'm going to give you the PT-8000A, which is VHF, HF, ham radio transceiver, working from 9 kilohertz to 30 megahertz as a receiver, but from 50 to 54, from 69 to 75, and from 144 to 148, and from 110, which is the avionics band, to 143.9. Now, the transmitter of that transceiver works from 160 meters to 6 meters. So it has 80, 60, 40, 30, 20, 17, 15, 12, 10, and 6. So it's almost a dual receiver, DSP, 16-pole analog plus digital filters, and the power is 200 watts. And guess what? It costs €14,500, not dollars, so we're talking about $15,000 euro. But that is including the VAT, which is their tax. The tax is 20%, if I remember correctly, or 21%, right. Now, the ICOM 200 watt, I had to go which model was that. Also, 200 watt is $6,700. You can buy it for $6,200. So that's the difference. The same company, Hilbering, German company, produces also amplifier. Let me check. Okay. The amplifier is fixed, 1 kilowatt power, and it costs $6,700. Now, the extreme into it is that we have the HS1 model, that's a model, the a software-defined radio, SDR, Chinese, by a company called A-I-L-U-N-C-E. Aliunci. 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 And this one costs only $577.99. It looks nice. It looks nice. So it has a Spectrum Dynamic waterfall display, the receive transmit mode, tune mode, VHF, VHO mode, and split mode, automatic notch detector, interface, color display. I'm not sure if it's touch one. I wonder if anyone has that Aliens HS1 software transceiver, and do you have any comment about it, Dr. Ray?
Well, I don't have either of those radios. There's a big difference for a lot of factors between a German-built, German-designed, German-manufactured tank of an all-function radio and a relatively lighter-weight Chinese SDR from a company that I don't think their website is even active right now. The life expectancy of some Chinese manufacturers can require a stopwatch occasionally. As we all kind of experienced, there was a time where there was a new company supposedly making handy talkies every week, and it turned out to really be two factories that were just changing the name, you know, every week or two. So, you know, the Heimerling is built like a tank. It's been around for a while now, as you mentioned. I think you said 8 years. That sounds right. It probably has a beautiful German performance. You know, German manufactured stuff tends to be high-end product-wise. It's not the prettiest radio in the world. Not that you have to have the prettiest radio in the world, but, you know, generally, other countries kind of their expertise in making things as attractive as humanly possible. It's not politically correct, but, you know, Italian manufactured stuff. My linear amplifier was designed in Italy, and it's rather pretty. You know, there's a place for everything. I wouldn't invest in a radio from a manufacturer whose website may be down. And, you know, Chinese is kind of Russian roulette. So some of their stuff is wonderful, and some of their stuff is not wonderful. So, you know, I don't know if I would promote $500 investment, especially if the website's a little wonky these days. And, you know, if you want a Hilferling, God bless you, as long as you don't ask me to pay for it. If the Hilferling was, you know, $1,000 or $2,000, I probably wouldn't buy it anyway. It's just too much of a tank. I like radios that can be partially hidden. So I'm very happy with my Flex 6700, which is decidedly less expensive than the Hilferling. But I saw it since their introduction. I read about it in QST. It's a fine radio. It has excellent specs. You would kind of expect that of a German manufactured product.
Okay. So the difference, if we try to say, is $15,000 versus $500, $550, whatever. No, their size, I was trying to open their size, and their size, the Chinese manufacturer size doesn't work. So I wouldn't even bother. I think I saw the price for it, $220 on sale. They are extremely popular on the eBay. They have a tons of handhelds and stuff like that, but the company doesn't exist any longer. So, okay, the next one. Oh, and the German company, the Hans Hilberling. DK7LG. So in 1988, he was thinking about making some sort of production, but eventually, 9 years ago, he decided if he's going to make the radio. And he didn't make any other radio, just this radio. But it's $15,000. And there, I believe, still guys who are buying it.
Another product is Malachi DSP2, portable all-mode DSR receiver. And it is advertised as insanely good. Malachi is also a Chinese radio, but there are pretty good comments about it. It goes from 10 kHz to 380 MHz and from 404 MHz to 2 GHz. And tunable bandwidth, modulation, all modulation, so it's AMSS, BDSB, CW, NFM, WFM, well, not all. Okay. Sensitivity 0.3 microvolt. 0.3 microvolt. 0.3 microvolt I met in a Russian military junk in Poland in 1970. So it's nothing special, 0.3 microvolt, up to 1 gigahertz. Okay, and that's it. Built-in preamplifier, battery, and whatsoever, gain control, notch filter. So if somebody wants to try this $219 Malachi DSP2, I believe portable Malachit, M-A-L-A-H-I-T, Malachit DSP2.
Wesley, million-dollar question. Do they have a North American distributor who will handle repairs? Because if they want you to ship it back to China, lots of luck.
You got it totally right. I wouldn't buy it. But anyhow, also, that Malachi I see for $298 with bonus. And it says now we have a second upgraded generation. So it looks like they made it, but it's not necessarily where it's good. The next one. There was a video, revolutionary ant-peed antenna built, wire-free ham radio antenna with Faraday tape. Very much clever idea. I love it. I'm not saying that it's practically good, but I love the idea. Do you remember that video, Dr. Roy?
Yeah, it's kind of disingenuous to kind of say it's without wires, because Faraday tape is just a fancy way of saying a adhesive tape where one surface is covered by a conducting metal. So it's a conductor. Apparently it's not contiguous. It's capacitively coupled with each segment. But, you know, it's a, you know, for all intents and purposes, it's a wire antenna. It's just they use a tape instead of a cylindrically rolled piece of wire, six of one, half a dozen of the other.
Yeah, but there is something interesting in it that the antenna is also on sale, I believe. But the guy is not really doing it like a mass production. He rather tries to say, guys, do it. You don't have to buy it. So you have a 5-6 elements of telescopic carbon tube, carbon fiber tube, and they are sloping, so when you extend them, it's like a fishing rod. You have a very, very long, very, very tall rod, right? But what he thought is, what would be if I decide to put vertically along the, each one of the of those elements, put the tape? That would be the conducting tape. And now, if I, instead of aligning that tape on each element, because there is no contact between element on the top and next element next to it, if I just slightly turn it to the left or to the right, then I would have like half of that tape on the top aligned with half of the tape of, at the bottom element. So now I'm regulating the capacitive fracture of the because there is no connection between elements. So those two act like a capacitor. So